Come now, all you mangy dogs, swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper madam. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties.
To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN.
With only 1 month to go until launching our annual Operation Secret Santa 10-day telethon charity extravaganza, this is episode 84, Pirate Radio Podcasts.
I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder.
Recorded earlier this week, exclusively via Skype, we're joined by UK-based Minds.com personality, Rowan Rizzoliere, a.k.a. 40 in Talks. Writer and presenter of many political, Fortean, and Cornwall, England-related events, Rowan, it is rumored, has even been viewed as a sort of almost real-life Captain Britain character by some. Covering everything on the map, from piracy and pop culture to sports, social media, and all things Minds.com, our talk heats up even more while hashing over numerous current events regarding Trump and Brexit, Weinstein's Hollyweird, Pedogate, and the Lolita Express. Episode 84, folks, that's right. Thanks for dropping by. A weekly show here with Pirate Radio Podcasts and our special presentation all the way from Cornwall, England. We've got 40 in Talks. This is a little different than the way we normally do things. We've had to pre-record this show, so that's just the way things go, though, as far as time schedules and whatnot are concerned. Mr. 40 in Talks, I'm not sure if that's how you want to be referred to over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, but you've got a number of different handles you use out there on social media.
You can call me Rowan. That's absolutely fine. The books and stuff that I chuck out usually are under my name anyway, so...
Oh, like Mr. Bean.
Yeah. It's a Welsh name originally, apparently. But it's named... It's a... What do you call it? A mountain ash type of tree.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And I've actually noticed... Well, there's a couple of things that just come to mind right off the bat here. Is I didn't really know that you were an author per se, so much as just a commentator. But secondly, the what appears to be some sort of like a Wiccan pentagram. Speaking of ashen or oaks and trees and wood groves and that sort of thing, is there a connection between those two, writing and what I'm presuming is some sort of pagan spiritual path?
Kind of, yeah. I was a sci-fi author for a long time, and I'm currently writing a book which will be out next year on commentary, current events and all that sort of thing, thoughts on that. A very factual book for a change. But magic has been an interest of mine for a very, very long time. Most of the pictures on my different platforms, you will see symbols of magic. On 40 in Talks, the minds.com, there's the Rosicrucian cross, which is full of pentagrams and symbolism. And, you don't live in the southwest of England and not pick up on magic at some point. So it's pretty prevalent around here.
I actually had a chance to visit the UK in the summer of 99, toured other various parts of mostly Western Europe as well, and was very much enthralled and... enamored by the whole experience, really, including the British landscape, what I saw of various places out in the country throughout Ireland and Scotland, Wales, of course, too, just beautiful, always very much enamored and entranced by the country, rural landscapes, the rolling hills, and just, you can see why there's the long-standing poetic tradition, the Romantics from, I guess it was from the Lakes District.
And Thomas in Wales. It's a very odd island, I have to admit. It does look similar to some parts of Europe, but the vast majority of it really doesn't. It's a very odd set of islands, and I wouldn't really want to change it for anywhere else for the moment.
So just for the record, we did cross paths via Minds.com not so long ago, and we, at least the show's producer, felt that it would be worth our while reaching out to you and having you join us as a guest. We'd like to ask you a little bit about your thoughts on Minds.com, but just before we do that, you've also got, I think it's a YouTube channel set up, a presence over on Twitter, Facebook, of course, but once again, all these various pseudonyms and alter egos. So it's tough just to find one single Fortean Talks. In fact, just leading up to today's show, this week's presentation, I did a quick YouTube search for Fortean Talks and found you with a couple of mates actually doing a video recording of sorts. Maybe it's part of your Fortean crew or posse. So like a series of sorts. You're discussing UFOs and hybrid alien type creatures, Sasquatch, and all kinds of good things. What was the story behind that exactly? The little mini series you put together there on your Ravenki channel?
Ravenki. Yeah, well, Fortean Talks did actually start originally between me and a friend of mine who lives fairly close, both interested in the Fortean side of life. So that can be all sorts. That can be, like you said, Sasquatch, UFOs, ghost hunting, aliens, magic, all of these different things. So we started doing that on YouTube, and after, I think it was 2 years of not solid filming, but just 2 years of hobby, if you will, it became quite evident that it was impossible to continuously do that line of subjects. Before I actually started filming that, I was I still am, Fortean editor for the Rake and Herald online magazine, and that's what kind of where the idea came from originally. With all the various different interests that unfortunately I carry on a day-to-day basis, including like I recently commentated on the Cornwall channel, which is a Facebook page as well, doing commentary on a football game or soccer game, depending on where you come from. So I had to move the whole idea of having a sort of chat show, if you will, to just putting thoughts out on VidMe and Minds.com. Like you said, that was the first platform I jumped to from YouTube. At the time, it seemed to be more forgiving of free speech, if you know what I mean.
VidMe or Minds? Which of the two are we
talking
about? Minds. Right. Oh, yeah, and that it is, most definitely. I think there's been a few little hiccups, and, it's an ongoing process, I guess, as I'm watching things unfold here. We've been around, actually, for the past 2 years plus now, I guess, is what it is, going as far back as checking the archives there quite recently, around July of 2015, right around the time of its initial launch. Things have gradually been picking up momentum and steam since then. So, and then there's, and we got a lot, or at least a few things we could talk about regarding Minds. I'd like to definitely get a few of your thoughts and opinions on regarding several matters dealing with the platform. But just briefly, because you mentioned VidMe just prior to once again us working on having our little conversation here this week. we commented through Minds that just kind of drew to your attention how there's a problem with VidMe that I'm getting, I know, on this end here in Korea. I'm not sure if it's just because of, you know, being based out of Asia or not, but that there's a lag and that there's like freezing issues with the platform just as a whole. But you've never found that, I guess, at all? You're having no problems at all there over in the UK?
No. I don't really have a massive problem. The one thing I will say is I do know over here a few people are struggling to run the platform on their phones. And the sort of dedicated app does tend to help with that. But I haven't noticed anything as extreme as you mentioned. The only thing I can think of is the fact that they are now about to compete with YouTube in terms of ad revenue. And that seems to be a thing that's altering the way people can watch videos. I had a message a few days ago saying, why is your videos littered with adverts? And I actually haven't even clicked onto that. So it must be something along those lines where they're still trying to streamline the servers and get things working 100%, maybe. I don't know.
You know, you're probably more up to speed on the whole VidMe platform than we are here. Courtesy of the Robinhood, which actually is an interesting tie-in, given your proximity there in Cornwall. I'm not sure how close that is exactly to Yorkshire. Nottingham, people have talked about as far as the origins of Robinhood, but actually, truth of the matter, I guess, many, many historians, their view of things is that Robinhood actually originated from the Yorkshire area. How close is that to Cornwall exactly?
It's quite a fair distance. If you look at the map of England and you see that little tiny peninsula at the bottom left-hand corner that sticks out, that's where I am. And Yorkshire is diagonally up as you can go while still in England before you got to Scotland. It's tiny, obviously. I mean, I know my country can fit in California, but it's a fair distance for us, I suppose. So probably 500-600 miles maybe or something like that.
That was one of the things that, just for our general listening audience, because of course not everyone is a UK geography buff or expert. So now that you've jogged my memory, I can kind of get what you're presenting there basically exactly that. In fact, Cornwall is it's a seaport location, is it not? Or
It's beach capital of England. I mean, if you were going to use a simile in terms of states, as in U.S. states, it's kind of like Florida, but...
A lot colder. Lousier weather.
Yeah, we've got great weather here. It's amazing. Genuinely is. It's usually warmer here on average than anywhere else in the U.K., which is not a massive brag, but it's not so bad.
Rather than just fumbling around blindly here tonight, I'm going to actually try to pull up a map of the UK and see if we can get just a little clearer sense of things. Yorkshire, once again, in my mind's eye, as I understand and recall, up, as you say, to the northeast view, 500-600 miles from where you're based out of. So, okay, well, there's so many different directions that we could take things here this week, including the captain, in accordance with the ship's articles, you might have a thing or two to say in regards to the fact that, the flagship that we sail out upon the high digital seas here on a week-to-week basis does go by the name of the Robin Hood, but our captain, Long John St. Clair, in accordance with the articles that he has here with the ship, is that he requires or asks of all guests that they provide some sort of pirate story, reference, or anecdote of some kind. I know we're kind of springing this one on you from out of nowhere. I'm guessing that you can kind of quite quickly pull something out of the old magician's
quite
easily. Or what have you.
Quite easily.
Yeah.
I can give you two instances. So the most famous pirate of all time would be Blackbeard. And there's no getting around that. Edward Teach, he was from Bristol, but actually grew up in Cornwall, some 10, 15 miles away from where I am. So that's quite a nice little brag. But also, I used to write a thing called The Drunken Space Pirates with a friend of mine called Phoenix Freebird. These are books that should be available on Amazon. I don't know if they still are. Pirating has been quite a... Oh, yeah, and I nearly stole a boat not long ago as well. Probably shouldn't say that, but I did nearly steal a boat.
Okay. I'm not sure, does that count as a crime in the UK these days?
Yeah.
Pretty much everything else does, it seems. So, I mean...
thinking about it.
I'll also add that to the list, just thinking about, pre-crime, Minority Report, or, thought crime. Now, it's interesting, and as much as we do love Blackbeard, believe me, I think, what was your claim, that he was the most famous pirate in all of history? Something along those lines. Let's not forget about Ching Shi. From prostitute to pirate lord. Have you heard of this woman?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Does it compare to the man that made himself look like the devil and only lasted about a year and a half, but had such a ginormous impact? Actually, you could always go for a Welsh one as well, though, with, God, I can't even remember his name. One that actually, Bartholomew. That was another really big name in pirating.
Bartholomew Roberts, I believe his name was it not?
That's the one.
Yeah. Oh, geez, there's so many. You know, we had our Talk Like a Pirate Day just about a month or so ago, and it was great, because that's one of the things the captain and some of the more kind of seasoned crew members as well, too, have been ribbing me on, basically pressing me to do a better job of getting up to speed on, because things turned out I was shanghaied when I first got brought onto the ship, and I couldn't tell you the first thing about the pirate's life or what it was like to, spend time on a ship or sail out on the high digital sea. So it has been a learning experience indeed. But, there's so many different places we could go with you. A man, it seems, of many interests and something of a raconteur, perhaps, of sorts. Definitely seem to be a decent conversationalist, at least to this point. So your books, then, let's maybe just kind of take a look at what, or rather reflect back on what you were kind of getting at there, basically, because what sort of, as far as, bragging rights, or I'm not sure if that's even the best way to put it. Well, what essentially do you have under your belt as far as literary productions are concerned?
Well, I've co-written 3-ish Drunken Space Pirates books. I know definitely one of them is available on Amazon to buy. And there's 2 books that I wrote myself that are available to buy on Amazon also. I'm not going to say they're the best books in the world, because that's not who I am. One of them was a sort of fiction story set in Asia about an English gangster, and the other one was a series of short science fiction stories that I'd kind of toyed with, again, sort of growing up in this area that I have done. I've lived all around the Southwest, and it gave me ideas of different, oddly, science fiction ideas. There's a thing not far from where I live at the moment, which is a man-made hill, and not a clay tip or anything like that, but it's no one really seems to pay much attention to it. But when you watch something like Stargate, for example, you get the idea of, well, what if someone's put something underneath that on purpose and hidden it? What if it's like an amazing piece of technology? And that's kind of how my brain worked for quite some time when I was doing science fiction stories. Yeah, I guess bragging rights. I don't know if I've got a huge amount for that, but there's a pirate, a space pirate story that I wrote as well, which I don't know where to put my hands on it in terms of giving you a link. So I can't think off the top of my head, but if I find it, I will send it over to you personally. But that's only like a buck to buy as well. Writing is quite an interesting thing, and you don't have to talk into a camera for a while, if you know what I mean. You can get lost in your own thoughts and then put them out there.
That's kind of what we're doing right now, basically shooting from the hip and improvising, just all spur of the moment, spontaneous exchange and engagement, frankly. So, which is one of the reasons I don't really like to do too much in the way of pre-interviews, although it varies from time to time. But I find that you lose a lot of the freshness that way, too. So do you find that in the writing process as well? Jack Kerouac, I know he was best known. One of the things that he was best known for, at least, was the axiom, first thought, best thought.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I've never, ever successfully done something I've thought through. It sounds really stupid, I know, but...
Just do it. Just fucking do it, man. Come on.
Get in there. Do it as hard as you possibly can and get out. It's the only way of doing things. It really is.
Get in, get out. In the moment, baby. First thought, best thought. So quite a few of the pirates here, crew members on the Robin Hood, could not agree anymore. Although there is something to be said for a little bit of planning from time to time, too. Let's not kid ourselves. Can't necessarily succeed all just on the basis of random happenstance and chaos.
Yeah, if you're capable of planning, then sure, that's absolutely fine. But if you're not, and you're basically a bull in a china shop, just go for it. Just keep doing that. Don't try and change yourself. Be that bull. Smash that china shop.
What do you got to lose, huh?
Exactly.
All right. So, once again, things that really kind of clicked with me, just going over your social media channels and outlets, kind of trying to work on getting a better feel of who Fordian Talks, a.k.a. Rowan, actually is. Or Ravenki? I don't think I have that pronunciation down right, do I?
No, that was Ravenaki. It used to be my old music stage name. I don't really know why I carried it on for so long, but yeah, Rowan, Fordian Talks, either of them, jobs are good in.
Musical stage name? What are we looking at? Well, what are we talking there exactly now?
A long time ago, I used to be a bit of a musician. And I say a bit because all I did really was aggravate people.
Oh, God. Was it a solo kind of gig, or were you part of a band, or what sort of setup did you have there exactly?
It was mostly solo. I did kind of like an EBM feel to my solo stuff. I did a little bit of acoustic guitar, which has now become like a thing, hasn't it? Everyone's doing, I don't know, I can't think of what they're called, but, you know, these guys that just go out and they've got a guitar and then they end up on some crap television show and they're a star for a year. Well, I used to do it just for a laugh. And I was involved in a metal band towards the end of realizing that actually this isn't for me. There's things that are more interesting to me than just being that punk rocker that pisses someone off for like an hour or something. Yeah, less said about that, truthfully, the better. The newer stuff is more interesting than the past, trust me on that.
Do you have any favorite musical groups or artists? Anyone that really like to listen to on a semi-regular basis?
Yeah, Pericababa, who are a French reggae band. VMV Nation, who is an incredible, absolutely incredible EBM band. And I really like a Japanese Visual K band called Schwarzstein. It's an odd group of music forms, but everyone should check them out at least once.
Well, we'll definitely have to add them to the show notes, some of their links for people to be able to sample at least and get a bit of a flavor for. Who knows, you might end up helping these groups pick up a little more of a following. So we'll just have to see how that all plays out. Going back to this business of, you know, because you talked about science fiction and whatnot, you've probably got a few favorite authors as well in that area. I'm, you know, and one of the names that kind of jumped out at me right off the bat, of course, as far as, animation and comics is concerned, was the Alan Moore. Someone who, he's a native fellow Englishman, of course, and I'm not sure how closely you followed his career or not, but is there much that you can share with us regarding the man and just thoughts on what he's, you know, produced to this point?
Surprisingly not. Weirdly, my favorite writer of any description is Clive Barker.
Well, he's kind of a Stephen King sort of character, is he not?
Weirder than King, I think. Hellraiser, the greatest books of all time. Imagica, he did. It was kind of a science fiction in a way as well. A complete curveball, I know. Bring up a horror writer, when I've done a lot of science fiction, but I've often found that studying what you want to do sometimes is counterproductive. Which I suppose goes back to the bull in the china shop, but the horror and dark fantasy side of things, and some seriously disturbing factual books that I've read over the years, are weirdly more influential in giving me something to write a science fiction about, or the idea of science fiction, than Dick or Moore. I'm pretty sure that Alan Moore did a run on Batman, and I think it was one of the big ones, but I can't think off the top of my head. But yeah, it's always been the sort of the left field approach, if you know what I mean, unfortunately.
Well, the road less traveled, I suppose, is what you're getting at, but I'm following you there. Then that's kind of my personal approach as well, too, if we're on the same wavelength with respect to this particular issue, how I've never been one to really just kind of go along with the crowd, ever. In fact, that makes me very suspicious anytime I see the Black Friday or zombie sales, or however, like you just see them storming, crashing the gates, or with trends and that sort of thing, the way things become all hip and manufactured, trendy, and everyone's doing it. So it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, come on now, let's maybe think about this a little more. So, or just more of a spectator, I suppose, than anything, or just doing it my own way.
I would probably suggest the latter. There's something very disturbing, in all honesty, about friends. And in fact, I can think of something really about Brexit at the moment, which ties into that very, very well. The majority of normal people, you know, hardworking, decent folk that voted for Brexit are still having to keep their mouth shut. And it just seems to be a little bit wrong. You know, the trend is, oh yeah, do this, do this, do this, think this. Don't you dare, like, go away from that. It's crazy. I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and it is kind of like, what was the film? Is it Equilibrium and 1984, which obviously was the big template of the worrying sign of friends and stuff. It does seem to be that fewer and fewer people really have the guts to just buck the trend and not care. And it's something that I would like to encourage people. I don't care what people think. I just want them to think, I suppose, is probably the best way of putting it.
Right. I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but the word government literally does translate as mind control. And
yes,
we've talked about that on more than one occasion here, courtesy of Pi Radio Podcasts, Gubern, to control, and mente, the mind, control the mind. And of course, then it's always the issue of, well, what about this business of autonomy then, and self-naming, and who's really calling the shots here? What, you're telling me that somebody else actually is dictating how I should live my life and think and dress and eat and so on and so forth, or feel about certain issues? So, and I'm really glad you brought up this Brexit issue, by the way. And your remarks, your comments with respect to that really reminds me a lot of how people feel about, and even up in the lead up to the election, this whole business of Trump. Maybe some are still even now, even though he still won the election and has been anointed El Presidente, they're reluctant and unwilling to admit their support for the guy. You know, if you can see what I'm saying as far as parallels there. And let's not forget, politics and religion, always very contentious. Always, you know, people say, don't talk in polite company. Do not bring anything, you know. But for me, you know, once again, I'm probably for a few of our listeners here as well, too. Can you think of anything more political than censorship? It doesn't get more political than that. Don't say anything,
people. Yeah, I have often wondered where that really comes from. That the idea of, like, keep your mouth shut, like, don't talk about things that are a benefit to actually talk about, because that's the whole idea of talking. I've often wondered where that comes from, and it's got to, at some point, it's got to come from the top, hasn't it? Like, don't do that. Like, just be a good little sheep, or whatever, you know? It's a strikingly odd thing to tell people, like, not to discuss these things. And yeah, there are huge similes with Trump and Brexit. Huge. The media really are the mainstream media, I should say, really. The biggest bane of it all, they will not accept facts and reality as they are. Just because you lost, tough, get on with it. That's what things are. You're right, censorship is probably the number one issue right now across all of the West, and I suspect potentially across the whole world.
No, wait a minute. That wasn't the outcome we were looking for. Let's do it over again. You know, or hold it. No, take three. And that's the whole thing with referendums, it seems, is that they keep repeating themselves until the powers that be get the outcome that they're looking for and they're satisfied. They don't want these populist movements or decisions made. And then, of course, you know, what are the implications of this as well, too, as things are played out? So Brexit, yeah, big thing that I've myself kind of been following. You know, it's been there at least. It's something. And that's one of the reasons that we reached out to you. We wanted to hear your thoughts and opinions, your kind of take. You've got your finger definitely more on the pulse there than myself here over in South Korea or many of our Western listeners over in the North American continent. So we've got a few people that tune in from time to time out of places like Australia, New Zealand, and miscellaneous other, you know, regions. What would you call it? Mainland Europe, I guess, as well.
Yeah, we call it the mainland. We don't like to, but we do.
I'm sure you love Europeans, you know, just like anyone. But, you know, it's like Canada. We'd like, or at least we try, the idea in our minds is to try and maintain a distinct relationship from America and Americans and American culture and so forth. Although the two are really indivisible on many levels, so all too problematic. But, yeah, Trump and Brexit. And that actually kind of, well, let's, you know, follow things up with you know, one of the places that we have seen you somewhat active is over in the Great Britain group, believe it or not. Well, you'll know as well as anyone, of course, because you've been posting there. But yeah, it's kind of great to see your engagement there for sure. You know, all the power to you. So it's interesting, too. We got so many group members over in different locations across mines, but very few people, as you pointed out, really want to seem to step forward and become engaged in one manner or another. So go figure.
Yeah, I think a lot of it does tend to come from, trust me on this, I'm no stranger to the feeling, but it does come from a type of fear. You can get in a lot of trouble in the UK for being too one way or another. Well, actually, no, that's not even true. There's an extremist law in the UK which is coming through, and it's pretty much aimed at the extreme right. Now, I like to think of myself as someone that's sort of centre-right, and I like to think that the stuff that I'm chucking out there for people to look at or watch or listen, whatever it is that I'm chucking out, I'm not too extreme on it as far as I can work out. But a lot of people don't know where that line of extremism is. And in fairness, the guidelines are not very clear. So that's kind of why in Britain you won't find a huge amount of people that will shout off the rooftops, if you will. I mean, you're going to find it. You're going to find people that will. You're going to find more extremely loud people than me. But they are few and far between at the moment. And the ones that are tend to be a bit louder tend to be a little bit more extreme on probably issues that they almost don't make sense. And that's not really a bitchy thing. It's just the big issue in the UK really is the one issue of how we've got to get out of Europe and have a sensible working relationship with the rest of the world and go from there like we always used to. Anything else in the UK at this moment in time is kind of secondary by quite a margin.
Whatever became of this idea of national sovereignty, and how is it that all these countries have simply signed away and handed over their right to self-rule? As you say, just, you know, the path to self-determination. Instead, it's these international globalist bodies, the EU and the UN and these multilateral high-level agreements, which only seem to serve first and foremost, at least, the interests of the 1%. You know, it's interesting mentioning Trump. That was the first thing that he did coming into office. He nullified the TPP. I think it was the morning or night of his winning the presidential.
Morning. First thing he did.
Yeah, there you go. Any thoughts?
Yeah. The reason that a lot of this happened, the idea of sovereignty becoming a bit of a dirty word, it started a long time ago, and it started in schools, like the disencouragement of patriotism. And, you know, I'm not talking about extreme patriotism, we're the best and everyone else is rubbish. It's just like, oh yeah, my country's quite cool actually. And then civic pride, I really like my town or my city or my county, whatever. All of those things became dirty via school. So your schooling, you were told that you wouldn't allow, you know, that's a wrong, you've got to think more European. And I do actually remember that being a thing when I was in school. So I dread to imagine what it's like now, to be honest. But it started there. And then, as you mentioned earlier with, let's retake this vote. Let's retake this vote. You look at Ireland as a prime example. I can't remember which referendum it was, but I think it was actually to go fully into the EU, or actually one of the agreements anyway. The first vote came up and they went, nah, you're right. So it's okay, we better do this again. And apathy, after about three times, I think it was, got so bad that people just went, all right, well, obviously we can't say no to this. You've got to say yes. That ball kept rolling across most of Europe. You see pockets of people that, and nations, entire nations of people that don't get on board with this idea that patriotism is bad. And like, fair play to them, really. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with liking your country. It doesn't mean that you think others are terrible. There's nothing wrong with saying, I like my town or my county. These are not bad things. These are good ideals, and there's no practical reason to say that it's bad or dirty. And yes, it does come towards self-sovereignty, which is, self-determination, self-sovereignty. These are ideals that I think we should all be striving towards. And I suspect we will do at some point soon.
On a similar note, what of race?
We don't actually have that issue here as much as, like, the U.S. This is...
What I'm getting at, though, is to say that my country is... I take pride in my country. And there's a few things, I guess, that I could try to add to that here at some point. But maybe just after you hopefully respond or comment. The same idea with race. Like, oh, just, you know, my race is this group, this category, whatever color it is. Pick any red, green, pink, yellow, blue, brown, you know, orange. Go for it, folks. Taking pride in your color. Does that make any sense to you at all? It's not an issue there in the UK so much, but on a similar level as to what you're saying about nation, pride in one's nation or community.
Yeah, it's very different here. So, no, most Brits don't really care whether you're black, white, Chinese, indifferent. It's not really that interesting to us. So I don't really well and truly get the idea, the premise. I do get, like, the sort of the national pride, the civic pride thing, but as regards race, it very often is sort of a non-starter for me. I grew up in Luton, just like Tommy Robinson, but I left when I was young, and my experience when I was younger was probably a hell of a lot better than his staying there. So, yeah, race to me is kind of a nothing issue. It doesn't... that's not to say that somewhere, you know, people do find it to be quite an issue, but to me it's a bit of a non-starter, and it always has been.
Although there are probably pockets, I suppose, here and there of all different colors, you know, whether it's the Indian or Chinese community or the Arab folks that migrate or you name it. So, yeah, that's what it sounds like is what you're saying, basically.
To me, the national pride makes more sense than race pride, in that if you've got your pockets of communities that want to be, like, I'm going to use this country as an example, they want to be in England, they want to be part of England, they want to love everything about it, work hard, get on with everyone, be English too, that's cool with me. You know, I suppose it's when you get reverses of that you end up with the pockets of the smaller communities that don't like certain things, and I define that as a bit of a shame.
Our levels just dropped out there for a moment. Not sure exactly why that was. I was just sharing with you, though, a URL link to the Great Britain group set up over in Minds.com. If you want to take a peek at that, you might get a bit of a chuckle. I'm not sure if you've actually got your account open at the moment or not. What device are you operating off of or running off of at the moment?
I've got an old Mac, which I'm running at the moment.
Okay. So Yeah, that was quite strange why our levels dropped out there. But one of the reasons we shared that group link with you actually is of the few people who do bother to engage and participate, one goes by the name of Child in Time. And I know that you've engaged him a little up until now, which is great. But I think there's been some people that have kind of complained as far as who is it? Red Pill TV, really big. I mean, the guy's got what, like 2 million, 3 million views or something like that already on Minds. And are you, do you know the channel Red Pill TV?
Yeah, I'm aware of it. Yeah. Pretty big deal. There's no getting around it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But the thing is that I'm not sure if you noticed this or not, but it's so easily triggered. So easily triggered. You know, it's hilarious. It's like, how did this channel get to be so huge with so many views when they're just, you know, just any little thing you say sets them off? It's incredible. So,
yeah, so many thin-skinned people. It does happen. But, yeah, you're entirely right. How on earth can that get so big when someone's just going to go so, well, from 0 to 100 in seconds over very, very little, I have to admit.
My sense, just basically, you know, I'll have to look into it a little further, but I think this Red Pill TV, whoever they are, it's, you know, I'm not part of the movement, as it were. I think it's, they're kind of leading the charge in some ways for the alt-right movement in some quarters, just a kind of well-known figure in some circles, and very ideological is kind of my impression. So that's the best that I can make of it. You know, we got these whales. It's interesting. That's what I like to call them, the social media whales. And I did see, just once again, doing my homework in the lead up to this week's conversation, that certain names, Lauren Southern, I guess, is one, and Faith Goldie. Arr, no. Yeah, you get the idea. But, you know, extremely bright, very beautiful, attractive. They got that eye candy thing going on there. Another one is, who's that lady that used to work for RT News? Oh, God damn it. She's the... She's out there on the front lines, really, although not as much as Lauren Southern, who's just all over the place. Although, hang on, I should take that back. No, Abby Martin. How can I forget, you know, the name? But it does happen from time to time. I'm not that fully automated yet.
Now you've got time. You can be upgraded.
Oh, God.
See, that's on the horizon, isn't it?
You want to go there? I mean, yeah, big time. I mean, I see it coming on fast. When I was a teenager back growing up in the mid-80s, basically, I saw a lot of things coming down the pike, as it were. So things that, as you say, that for some reason, big media just never talked about. They couldn't seem to figure out, or they didn't seem too concerned about. I saw them coming. I'm sure a few other people that kind of, you know, kind of gave some thought to things and reflected upon the reality of where we were at in that day and age. That's like 30 years ago now, folks, with business of, and you know, all this clash of civilizations and immigration, and how was the nation going to approach these, you know, sort of policies with respect to the influx of foreign peoples with their foreign ideas and ways and so forth, and, you know, economics and World War III and so on and so forth. Speaking of which, World War III, I'm not sure if you kind of get this or not, but it pisses me off to no ends how people go on about, oh, World War III, just around the corner. World War III, it's coming soon. Watch out, it's World War III. For fuck's sakes, people, what are you, like 12 years old or something? where were you on September 11th, 2001? I remember where I was, you know, and I kind of saw, once again, not the sharpest tool in the shed here, folks, not by any means, believe me, but is able to see, like, yeah, this is a catalytic event here that we're looking at, and this is going to have implications. And one of the first things that I did was I went to the bank, and the dumbest thing a person could do, of course, too, but because you would think everyone else might be doing the same thing. Holy shit, get your money out of the bank. But that's just going to cause a panic, of course, too. But yeah, World War III, you know, September 11th, 2001. So trying to backtrack a little bit, I'm not sure if I really was able to, I don't think I formally delivered a, oh, I know what we're talking about, Abby Martin. So my thoughts, beautiful, you know, articulate, and she's got some great, I like the way that she editorializes and she's able to articulate, does a hell of a lot better the job than I do, or probably, you know, that I ever will. But for the stage that she finds herself out on, there's some times where I'm listening and kind of just the way the flow of the conversation and the way things go, it's not quite as smooth a delivery as compared to someone like Lauren Southern or Faith, even maybe Faith Goldie. But I mean, Southern is really bright. You know that she was involved in Canadian politics, kind of like recruited at a young age and was part of the libertarian movement, I guess, or yes, organization for a time.
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah, she is definitely a smart cookie. And yeah, she's been hanging out with a lot of identitarians, I noticed lately as well, which does lead into what you were asking me before about race and things. And there is pockets of that popping up. And again, with the red pill thing, I would say you're pretty much on the money there, in that there is a strong undercurrent of, should we call it, identity politics. Because in my eyes, it is very, very similar to the identity politics of the left. It's just the backlash against it, but it's still identitarian. It doesn't feel as big as inclusive. And I'm not saying that they're wrong, because it's definitely not my place, because I haven't really spent a lot of time with a lot of these people. Like the, I can't even think what it was, but they had the Spartan shield as their logo. God, what the hell were they called? Yeah, it doesn't matter. But and there's a new one, Britannica, probably the same, Europa something or other. So for every one Lauren Southern or your Faith Goldie, for example, you're going to get a couple of these Red Pill TVs that are so much thin-skinned in comparison. But there is obviously a very strong undercurrent of feeling of identitarianism. And if it was just as simple as the type of patriotism that I like, and I think many, many other people like as well, I would be overjoyed with that. But because of certain things that have gone on over the years, specifically really in Europe, what's going on right now with the total open border stuff and, you know, various different things in the States, it's not hard to understand why this backlash has turned up. It's just some people will be terrified by it, others will be interested. By interested, I mean curious, and others will be like solidly behind it. But I don't think you're ever going to get the indifferent as heavily as I suppose I feel towards it. There's nothing particularly wrong with the ideas, but I find that of any idea, that generally speaking, an idea can be fine. It's just application is the issue.
Right. Technology, fire, for example, guns, even, for crying out loud. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. You know, the old cliche, but it's true. And fire, too. I mean, in and of itself is fine. I mean, you can do a lot of harm with it, or you can use it to help cook your dinner, I suppose, and feed your family, too. Yeah. So it all depends on to what ends you are, the direction you want to, I guess, steer things, or how you want to use what is you have at your disposal. So, now, did you know that her Patreon account was actually suspended and, I guess, well, shut down essentially? But, and it was because of, and this, we're talking about Lauren Southern once again, mm-hmm. and there actually is another, just one further point I like to add to things, kind of a criticism, really. But this is more just something which I think a lot of people felt sympathetic towards, unless they were just like total haters, of course, which there are bound to be some out there, of course, that were happy to see her Patreon account shut down. But because of her efforts in helping to be a part of, or at least just report on this blockade of sorts, or they had these like ships that were out essentially working to stave off or drive away the influx of foreign invaders. You know, that were coming in through, I guess, I'm not sure exactly even where it was. Were you following that at all when it came in the Mediterranean or England? I don't know.
What was actually happening was there were a large amount of NGOs, non-government organizations, and NGO boats coming from the ports in Italy and going down to about 1 mile off the coast of Libya, picking up people from, I suppose they'd be like gunboats, if you know what I mean. You know,
we're all about that. I mean, pirate radio. Yeah. Hey, give us a. We need gunboats for sure. Bring on the gunboats.
No, gunboats. I mean, like a dinghy.
Oh, well, dinghies. I'm not sure, sir. Well, maybe pass on the dinghies. But yeah, if we're talking gunboats, yeah, like far out, man.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically, these boats, they were going down, picking up like vast swathes of young African men, and you know, we're told that they're actually going and saving Syrian refugees or whatever. But Syrians don't look as black as that, from my memory. Anyway, they're picking these people up and taking them straight back to Italy. From there, they were filtering in through the rest of Europe. She was part of the main blockade movement that was stopping the NGO boats from doing that. And to be fair, going and picking people up from the coast of Libya and then planting them into mainland Europe and saying, right, just go and claim dole or whatever, is absolutely ludicrous. It's not going to do anyone any good. And actually, thanks to Lauren Southern and this movement, a law was passed, if memory serves, to stop the NGO boats from just picking people up. They were going to change it so that if there was a humanitarian crisis for these people in a boat in the middle of the ocean or whatever, fine, they'll pick them up. But really what they should be doing is taking them back to where they're from. I don't think that's racist. I just think that that's what really we should be doing. Like, don't let people try and drown themselves for no particular reason and stop flooding Europe with other people that aren't really from Europe and don't seem to have much interest in sort of like German culture or Italian culture or French culture or British culture, whatever.
Other than being interested in cashing in and getting a free ride where it's possible, I myself, like a lot of people, am all for immigration. The West, Canada, America is a nation and continent of largely of immigrants, unless we're talking what many refer to as the First Nations people. But that's where I get conservative, I guess. Even from my standpoint here, living as a Canadian expat for the past 15 years, I had to do all my paperwork just to get here. And you would assume and would hope that everybody else would in order to get where they want to go. And once that's taken care of, fine, you're in. But the vetting is critical, and that's one of the things that Trump has at least paid lip service to. So it's important that we keep that in mind and think about that. Whether anything is done, actually, who the hell knows? What power do we even really have? So that was one of the issues I wanted to bring up with you and actually ask your opinion about was, what is the value or purpose of our opinions? Armchair philosophers and commentators, you know, whether it's in, you know, people out there in social media or just having a conversation in a coffee shop or pub, like, what's the point? What purpose does it really serve? So political persecution, by all means, if people are facing political persecution at the hands of a tyrannical regime, then of course they should be allowed refuge in a place where they can find safe haven. Unfortunately, things in many cases, it seems, have gotten to the point now where you've got this exodus from the people in the West and America too, believe it or not, leaving, they're out of the States. Things have gotten so bad in many cases that, and this is one of the reasons too now, I guess, embassies or whoever it is that issues the passports are jacking up the prices in order to, I guess it is, renounce your citizenship. Now, the cost of things has got a lot more expensive over the past year or so because of this outflow of the brain drain.
It is very noteworthy. To pick up on your first point, it is absolutely 100% possible to be both pro-immigration and anti-open borders at the same time. There is absolutely nothing wrong with immigration when done properly. Like you said, wanting to come in, be part of the country and all that. Now, the second part, the brain drain was always going to happen, but I didn't expect it to continue once Donald Trump got in, surprisingly. There was a swathe of Americans renouncing their citizenship and moving to Chile for years under the Obama regime. I could kind of understand that as it was it was almost like a new Hong Kong. So a Wild West for new tech and new money. But once the whole thing in the States had changed, it, you know, not massively, but sort of enough, especially with taxes and things, or going to change, I should say. I was quite surprised that it's still ongoing. I do actually get messages on a semi-regular basis of people saying the same sort of thing, funny enough. Oh, yeah, I'm leaving the States to go to Singapore or Korea. Well, you know, why? Why would you do that? Choice is no bad thing, really. There's no harm in doing that. But I do find it a bit of a shame in terms of the brain drain itself. You know, Britain, America, Canada, Australia, these are countries that used to be, well, not used to be, that there are great countries that could be even better, I suppose.
MAGA, make America great again. Yeah, so whatever that, I mean, it's like, it sounds great on the surface of things. So, I mean, good luck, folks. It's almost as vague as Obama's rhetoric, change and hope. It's like, what are we talking? Fill in the blank. I mean, it could be anything, right? Change. What kind of change? Where are we going to change things to? Are we going over here or there? Or what are we doing exactly? So Canada used to have this political party known as the Reform Party. And yeah, right off the bat, I was, of course, as I'm sure a lot of people ask themselves, well, yeah, you know, people want change and reform, but what direction are we going here with things? So on the surface, it all sounds wonderful, but that's about as far as it goes, unfortunately. So
politics, definitely, yeah.
Hey, well, listen. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're right. It's platitude. I just remembered another point what that you brought up before of what value is our opinions. In my eyes, gold. Discussing anything with anyone is gold, and it should never, ever be stopped.
Like what we're doing now? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're saying that, you know, armchair commentators or even just chatting to people in your local coffee shop or pub. I think the weight of the opinion, regardless of whose opinion it is pure gold. And it should always be treated as such.
Right. Yeah. But the way I see it, maybe you can help impact my view somehow, or maybe be able to adopt a fresh perspective on things. But what impact does our opinion or view of things have on the larger picture? That was kind of my question. Or even someone like Lauren Southern or Alex Jones, you know?
Well, eventually those opinions do. We're like pebbles on a hill. So at start, it's nothing. As it rolls down, eventually it becomes a big Alex Jones at the bottom. A race to the bottom in a way, I suppose. No, it is important. You don't realise what impact you have until a lot longer down the line. You have no way of gauging exactly what impact your opinion has on someone until a very long time after, a very, very long time after. It's not something that you're going to see like a short-term turnaround on, to be honest with you. It is a long-term game, a lot of these things. Hey, look, a Lauren Southern, an Alex Jones, a Paul Joseph Watson, these people have huge platforms and they have huge impacts, but they're still not going to see that impact in the very early days, or even probably now. I imagine actually Lauren Southern's not going to see some of the impacts of some of her things for a lot longer down the line.
Well, there are, unforeseen consequences, and you're right, I do agree. You can never fully weigh or measure the impact of your actions or statements, because we just don't know what the implications are, frankly. It kind of operates on a very cosmic, almost metaphysical level. From that standpoint, as you say, pebbles or ripples out on the ocean's surface. Unforeseen consequences, that's one thing, and just the implications of what we throw out there, who the hell really knows? But I guess in the larger scheme of things, as far as impacting, shaping, influencing public policy, I guess that's what it would come down to. Not just public opinion and people's thoughts. Like, sure, people that tune in and listen to even like little Bush League shows, kind of such as ourselves, second-rate amateur productions that we put together here on a week-to-week basis, you know, they engage and are a part of things, and we share in conversation and exchange of ideas through Facebook and Minds and other platforms across social media. I guess you got to be part of a campaign, I suppose, in a big way. It really, it just depends, because One of the things that media does do, established media in particular, is for one, is they establish the parameters of the dialogue and conversation, or what are even the issues of the day, while ignoring others completely. You know, so it's very subjective in that sense. And then, you know, dictating, I guess, to the public what is important and what's not, and so forth. So there's something else I was going to add regarding Brexit, but just maybe leave that aside for now. What I was going to point out, though, because once again, it's the last Lauren Southern comment I'm going to make, because I really respect her. I do. I got to give her credit. She's fucking ballsy. She's out there on the front lines. You know, she's pretty fearless, really, I would say, in a lot of ways, bright and really got it going on. The one criticism, though, is the way that, for example, I think she was just off in Japan recently interviewing Black Pigeon Speaks, is like, I guess the guy's name. And then she was in Acapulco just, I guess, before that, a few months ago, as far as what I can make out. But the thing about it is she, you know, espouses all these libertarian, tyranny, anti-statist sort of views. Yet at the same time, she's traveling internationally. I have not traveled internationally myself for around 10 years now. I've been voting with my feet. And the reason being is because of this biometric, what would you say, the control and command grid, the way that everyone's biometric data, facial recognition, and now even in places like Korea, you want to come into the country as an outsider, you're expected to submit your biometric fingerprint information. I think they do facial scans. I mean, hell, they'll probably be collecting DNA samples before too long, and blood as well, too. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least. So that, for me, that just doesn't quite square. You know, unfortunately, it's great that she's got all the money and time to head off and visit Black Pigeon Speaks and do whatever else with him and whoever in Japan and then Acapulco. But wouldn't it make more sense just not to travel at all and to say, fuck this, I'm voting with my feet and I'm doing this for a reason. I'm not going to, you know, until things change policy-wise once again, I'm not leaving.
Yeah. The world is so interconnected without having to physically fly somewhere. We're talking two opposite ends of the world right now. You're 100% correct on that. It is daft to constantly fly in the face of danger with all that stuff that they will collect off you. I mean, yeah, like anything could happen. And you're right. It's daft. You should just literally say, right, I'll Skype interview or I'll whatever, you know? You're going to go down that route.
Now, with her being part of that blockade, that's a different story. That was, you know, or I think she was out there on the front lines down, and you might want to contribute, you know, your 2 cents worth, or I think your opinion's, like you said, it's worth a little more than that. I'll give you the golden seal of approval or what have you. A few pieces of 8 for you, perhaps, there in your purse, Rowan, before the end of the show, if things continue to flow along here as they are and have been for the past. What is it now? Hour plus. So, in fact,
hour 20.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll go, if we can, maybe another 15, 20 minutes max. Usually we edit things down a little bit. There's been a lot of coffee, and I know, coming through from your end, and I'm not sure. I usually grab these throat candies, these lozenges.
Oh, no, I've got a very bad illness.
Oh, no. Do you want to have this on the record, or?
Oh, no, I'm being overdramatic. I've got a cold about me.
Okay, so I'm all stuffed up here too, man. We got the winter coming on. Things are sinking into a bit of a deep freeze here for sure. It's a struggle, but on the whole, I would say life is good. Life is good. It's been good for me here in Korea, as much as one can hope for. Not as much as one can imagine, because you know, imagination.
Imagine being emperor, being better.
Well, yeah, it's good to be king, huh? I guess, unless you're Tom Petty. Although, that was one of his songs, too. I'm not sure if you caught that or not. But presumably, you're well aware he passed away not so long ago. So it was good to be Tom Petty, probably for the 66 years that he lived on this earth, though, I'd imagine. Now, and because I would press you on that a little more, other than the fact that those names that you just threw out there a few minutes ago, musically-wise, they were way over my head and wasn't overly familiar with them at all. So one thing which isn't too underground and where you are a lot more mainstream, I would say, is your interest in sports. Hockey, I see. You've got a lot of jerseys there. You're a big pop culture fan. I see you wearing Shazam t-shirts and Green Lantern Super. Are you that Captain Marvel Jr. guy? You know, people have been wondering. I've seen him around. A lot of folks have. So maybe that's this Captain Marvel dude. Who knows?
There was a campaign a little while ago to get me to be Captain Britain, which is a Marvel comics, very similar sort of character to Captain America. That's about as far as that goes with that, unfortunately. I love sport. I have been covering my local football teams for a couple of years now. And yeah, I do like the Boston Bruins. When I was a youngster, I did actually ice skate and I did play ice hockey as well, which is very odd for England. You know, you don't find it very often. We do have hockey teams. They're so few and far between. You know, it's not as widespread as like Canada, but yeah, football, really the big thing over here, the massive deal. And my interest with local football is mostly, it might sound strange, everyone says like the Premier League is the best league in the world, it's the biggest league in the world, but I hate its money. I don't like the fact that it costs a fortune to go and watch like Liverpool versus Manchester United or Chelsea Arsenal. The teams don't really care if you turn up or not either because they're more interested in their global markets. They couldn't care less. The only guy that I thought was of any merit in the Premier League for a long time was a guy called Frank Lampard. But, you know, you take it down to a local level. There's two teams in my area that I go and follow. I get to chat with the players on a regular basis. I get to watch decent football. It doesn't cost me the earth. And it doesn't feel like some sort of odd conspiracy theory when I go there. I just turn up, watch my football, have a lovely time, and crack on again. It's probably one of the few sort of popular vices that I've got, I suppose. Yeah, but I'm definitely not Captain Marvel Jr., unfortunately.
Although you are, a candidate to become perhaps Captain Britain, is from what you're telling me. Maybe we could help give that campaign a bit of a boost via mine.com.
I don't think it'll ever happen. I would love it, but also I'd be petrified to go to Hollywood right now with all the rapists coming out and stuff.
God, speaking of transitions, yeah. So, but no, before we get into that, and we could if you want, I know I'd love to talk about that a little bit, just because it's so much in the news and contemporary, and you know, it's ongoing as we speak. Kevin Spacey and, of course, Weinstein, and just it seems even George Takei.
Hey, yeah,
it's okay to be, no, what is it? It's just say Takei if you want to be gay. Something.
Yes.
I kind of like George Takei, but you know, this horny little guy. You know, like geez, you know, I'll leave it at that. So, but his character is Sulu, and I'm not sure about his politics per se. And that's another issue too. Are you one of these types? Are you able to separate the art from the artist? And even though, for example, one of my favorite musicians is Bruce Springsteen. He was for quite a few years. He's a tour de force, of course, and a just an incredible musician, obviously, songwriter. His track record and song and music repertoire speaks for itself. But his politics, that's another thing, especially when I see you out there alongside Lady Gaga supporting Hillary Clinton. It's like I feel physically ill when I see stuff like that. I cannot – it's like I cannot watch it. You know, I just cannot watch it. So – can you yourself, though, separate the art from the artist and distinguish, you know, well, you might not agree with their politics, but you can appreciate what it is that they produce creativity.
Absolutely. I cannot stand Sir Patrick Stewart as a man in terms of his politics. The guy is dreary, anti-Brexit, very, very terrible man to turn around and say, like, take a knighthood and then turn around and say, I'm embarrassed to be British because they voted against staying in the EU and becoming part of a superstate. What utter drivel. However, in the X-Men franchise, he was fantastic. And in the Star Trek franchise, he was absolutely incredible as well. I'm able to separate character or art from artist to a fairly large degree. So there's some things that, if it comes out that they've done something really horrendous, that's going in the bin. But if it's just as simple as that their politics is dreary and stupid, that's fine. You know, I don't have to listen to them as a person. I can just watch their on-screen escapades and accept that as being that and the person as being something completely different. Actually, I learned that originally from comedians. I used to love Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer. And when I learned that they were kind of like comedians were actually boring people in real life, although Vic Reeves has the largest compendium on pirates, and might be someone worth looking up. He's got loads of pirate logs, more than the National Museum. But, yeah, you get the idea that, oh, yeah, the person different from what they perform, so that's cool with me. But only on times of politics. Anything else, you know, if it's some really dodgy, horrible stuff, then I won't be able to separate it, but politics isn't a problem.
Timey kangaroo down sport?
Yes, exactly. I cannot actually watch the BBC anymore. I have friends who constantly tell me to watch BBC this program on something or other. I struggle to watch anything that organization has pumped out. They're a terrible, terrible bunch of people.
Were you much of a fan of Jimmy Savile as a kid? I know he probably peaked in his popularity just, you know, prior to you. You know, you were just barely out of the womb yet. But
No, than you think I am. He had a show called Jim Will Fix It in the 90s when I was a youngster. And, yes, I did not really care for the chap, if I'm honest. He always seemed a very...
dodgy, something rubbing you the wrong way, for lack of a better expression. Well, who was it? Louis Theroux. I'm not sure if you followed part of the documentary series Louis put together where... he would drop by various, I think it was mostly British celebrities' houses and spend a little bit of time with them, getting to know them a little better or trying to. Paul Daniels, a famous magician who just recently passed away too, was another character, somebody that I actually quite respect as far as, once again, separating art from the artist or their political views, just as a magician. Really fantastic, of course, undeniably. Very astute and adept, a master of his craft. And I hope there's nothing that ever comes out on him as far as his ties to the... you find so many times, too, with this pedophilia business, are you aware that the majority of culprits and perpetrators that are being busted for these crimes ultimately turn out to be, more often than not, Freemasons?
They're Freemasons, they're leftists, they're satanic... I've been given a book to read called Musical Truth by a man called Mark Devlin. I've only just got a partway through it. I 100% recommend it. There's a whole section on the BBC in it. There's a whole section about exactly what you just asked there. And the music industry is going to be the next one after Hollywood that gets hit. Like, trust me on that one, after reading as much as I have of this book. It's crazy.
Look at Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. They're just recently reminded of this the other day with a meme that's been, I guess, making the rounds online. But he was presumably, he was on very intimate terms with the young 14-year-old girl who was this kind of flame of sorts, I guess, there for a couple of years, you know.
Well, she wrote a book about it. There's a few of them that have written books about it, yeah.
So what's that all? I mean, it's kind of a crime, but it's like that's kind of pretty dodgy. Pretty dodgy stuff.
Oh, God, yeah. There's so many of them that I have to admit, I'm at the point now where I don't lament anyone in the public eye the passing. You know, it might seem heartless or whatever, but you just don't know.
But here's the thing about it. Think about it this way, too. It's really interesting to reflect upon because Jimmy Page, I don't think he had to rape her. That's, the really, I think, key kind of point, along with it being, yes, we understand it's illegal, but it's not like Savile or Bill Cosby having to roofie all these women, or it's a little different, I guess. It's been talked about recently, too, with becoming more of an issue with Weinstein and Hollyweird. Sleep with the guy to get your movie role, right? So to have your face up there on a silver screen. Presumably, yeah, Paige didn't have to rape her.
No, but...
he was seduced by the power and the fame. Mostly the fame and charisma, probably, and his music, right?
Yeah, but there's still... statutory rape is still statutory rape. So you know, it's a very dodgy thing to be doing. I know, admittedly, if you're in Japan, then 14, I think, is actually the age of consent, whereas 16 here and so on and so forth. But it's still just weird and wrong. No matter... Well, there's been a few instances over here of people that have... footballers, for example, that claim that they didn't really do anything wrong, but they probably have, and by court of law they have. So it's a dodgy ground, really. It's just, it's hard to navigate. I mean, look at Jerry Lee Lewis marrying his 13-year-old cousin. I mean,
Elvis Presley. How old was Priscilla when he first started? It's quite a can of worms, obviously. Just trying to think where we can steer things. We've only got a few minutes left here, of course, just once again. It's such a weird time, too, because I know it's, 3:30 there in the afternoon, and it's about 12:30 here in the morning. So what is your schedule like here just over the course? What do you got at the top of the hour?
I've got to make sure I finish off my writing on Sundays and Mondays, Sundays and Wednesdays. I'm writing for my factual book. The fact that I've done this will probably be lobbed in there, but will be. But I've got to make sure I've got the whole week's current events with me.
I would hope so.
Yeah, of course it will.
Oh, God. Well, it's a little odd and a little offbeat for sure. It's a little different and out of sync from the way that we usually do things. It's been pretty spur of the moment and basically flying by the seat of our pants. We had a rough idea of what it was, some of the questions that we wanted to kind of throw out there and bounce off of you, but there's a great video you put together recently on VidMe, the circling back around to that whole issue. Screamers, not for Trump so much as against Trump, kind of like what these witches did, I guess, back during his, was it just after he had won office, that they cast a spell on the guy. So what do you think of the screamers, the anti-Trump hellraisers?
I think it's moronic. I really do. I've got to be honest. At what point is acting like a child and screaming helplessly at the sky going to be anywhere near productive? I find it hilarious on so many levels. It's all they're doing is giving the rest of us memes and videos to laugh at. And so for that, you know, I thank them. I think it's wonderful. I'm so glad they actually went through with it. But it's mad. It's really, really, really mad.
Yeah, absolutely. My own way of looking at things is, look, give credit where there's, you know, where credit is due. And so that if someone, anyone, even Trump or Obama, it doesn't matter who we're talking about, if they do something which you agree with and which is decent and you think worth commending, then we should do so. Outside of that, though, I think, yeah, it's important that we do criticize and fight for that right to speak out in opposition to whatever it is that is being tabled or these. Really, because they are the criminals in many cases, the power elite, wherever you find them, Britain, South Korea, Canada, America, I mean, just you name it. It's a structural, institutional issue, as far as I'm circumcised. So, you know, you got yeah, that's my little catchphrase, trademark that one. You know, that even Trump, for example, teaming up with RFK Jr., I'm not sure how far they've come along with things, but the anti-vaccination kind of, that's where it gets a lot, very conservative approach versus the more liberal, let's just shoot them up with everything we can possibly get our hands on and hope that it works because, you know, science says so, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where you stand on that whole issue. I don't even know if we want to even get into that right now, but there's been other things too with as we were talking earlier, the war on pedophilia. He's been doing a great job. It's what it seems, at least on the surface of things. And who knows what's really going on behind the scenes, what strings are being pulled on or levers pushed or, you know, what have you, to kind of shake things up a little bit and have these serial scumbags outed like Cosby or Weinstein. I mean, just or Seville. I mean, these are it's pretty brutal, of course, and pretty extreme. So where it gets dicey or really odd or kind of borderline is where you have an 18-year-old with a 16-year-old, and then you have, like, you know, the 18-year-old. It could be a woman even, I think, in some places, being charged with crimes because of the 2-year age difference, that sort of thing. So that's a little bit kind of...
Yeah, It is it's muddy waters without clear rules and guidelines. And credit where it's due, yes. However, you've got to use your words, not scream helplessly. If there is something that so massively needs criticising, use your words, don't scream. That's one thing that I will say. But yeah, it does seem to be extremely politically motivated, all of the wrong'uns, shall we say, being outed. And whether it be because Uncle Donald, as I like to call him, has set it in motion, or whether it just be the fact that because he got in, it's been set in motion. It doesn't matter. The important thing is it's coming out, and it will ultimately be a very tough time for a lot of people, but a very good time for a lot of people as well at the same time.
Ivanka Trump, his daughter, apparently is the one who's been kind of put in charge of that end of the operation, as it were. So that's my understanding, at least. So
probably a really good choice.
Yeah. Speaking of Trump and all this kind of the sordid business, the Lolita Express and a man by the name, billionaire, nice Jewish boy by the name of Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, I've heard about that. The first time I heard about that was actually because of Bill Clinton. But yeah, there seems to be a lot of people on a very, very disgusting little trip going on. It was also sort of hinted at in a Dr. Phil episode, I think, as well. I'm not 100% certain on that. But
oh, my God. Oh, that was blown wide open. Yeah, not in a direct way. They didn't say, well, gee, this is Jeffrey Epstein, the Lolita Express. But there was, pretty intense show that he recorded, and it really set a few things in motion for sure. But as far as a direct tire connection, no, I don't think that's been publicly or clearly established to this point. So it could be pretty dangerous waters for, certain people. There's the Clinton body count, and they play for keeps, these people, some real hardballs, so that if you've got inside information on certain players, they can really, they can easily make you either just shut the fuck up or just quickly disappear.
So, oh, yeah. It's terrifying, isn't it?
Well, but at the same time, a lot of, so much of it is spiritual warfare, I think, too, really. But that aside, and because that's a whole nother show, of course, with respect to Epstein, that's where we got the Kevin Spacey tie-in. Apparently, he's one of the people who flew on that plane. Another guy, nice, kind of old and ugly Jewish guy by the name of Alan Dershowitz. I call him Dershowitz. Dershowitz. Yeah, Dershowitz. What a jerk, man. I mean, just a loud, hopefully don't come across as too hypocritical. What a loudmouth jerk, man. I mean, just an old, just nasty old airbag. And, how do the English talk about get their comeuppance? Whatever. I don't even know what that means. Yeah, but, I mean, he was fingered. And it's in cases like this
where you got to
be careful with who's fingering who, because that's why they got into trouble in the first place, right? There's all that fingering going on. So.
Yeah.
But no, he was on the list and I guess kind of weaseled his way out of things, legal wrangling and whatnot. The big mainstream media once again, because we always see him there. He's always kind of trotted out via CNN or you name it as a talking head or legal commentator or what have you. So big time supporter and cheerleader for the state of Israel as well. Oh God. And we're jumping all over the map here too, because this is interesting. Speaking of which, it's kind of how we, just before we kick things off here tonight, I had drawn to your attention how on Twitter, because I was trying to get a better feel for your feed over there, that Prince Charles, I guess it's trending that he, I guess it's some scandal now because he's spoken out with respect to a 1986 letter where he criticized, let's see what it says here, letter from 1986, blame Jews for unrest in Middle East. Well, because I know you've got your thoughts on the matter, but the fact is most Zionists aren't even Jews. You're aware of that, aren't you? Aren't you?
Yeah, most of them aren't. I mean, like, most Jews are decent people.
A lot of them aren't even Zionists. That they don't support Israel either. Some, many of them, right?
It's got its fors and its against, and I think that is about as far as I go with Israel. In that, it's got some serious plus points, and it's got some serious minus points. And it hasn't helped over the years with the hornet's nest that is the Middle East, and it has helped in other ways, specifically the Western nations, as opposed to anything that would potentially help smooth over relations down there. But no, of course, like most Jews are not Zionists at all.
Yeah, I don't know about that, of whether it's like 50-50 or most being, because it's all politics. And the fact of the matter, as you probably well understand, most Zionists are, like, it seems to me at least, correct me if I'm wrong, but Christian fundamentalists.
Yes, generally.
Right? Isn't it, you know, Korea, we got them here, believe me, very pro-Israel. The Protestants? Huh? Not so much the Catholics, I don't think, but I think the Bible-thumping Protestants and all that came courtesy of good old G.I. Joe, Captain America, or, you know, USA with the Korean War and so forth. So let's just wind things up here then. Charles Fort, you know, we've covered all the, you know, all the talking points, I think, that are most critical here for the time being, at least. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you, of course. We've been all over the place, though, man. It's been total chaos. But that's something that you can kind of identify with, if I'm not mistaken, the principle of chaos. So, you know.
Big fan of it.
I was going to ask you about Charles Fort and Fortianism and chaos. Care to comment on, because, I mean, that's how you got into Fortianism, is the founder was a guy by the name of Charles Fort, correct?
That is correct. The guy was interested in some seriously interesting things, which I know I've used the word interesting, like, effectively three times now, but I can't stress it enough. The laws of the unnatural and the laws of the natural seem to be his two most interested study areas. And it has been for me, I have to admit. I do have a wee bit of affinity with the guy. Why is it that frogs will rain from the sky even when there's been no, what the hell would you call it, like a twister to suck them out of ponds or whatever? Like maybe they come from another planet. It's entirely possible, especially if you go back to different things. Chaos is just wonderful. It's so fair. And I know I might sound like the Joker out of The Dark Knight Rises, but it just is. It's better than order. But then, yeah, I'm always going to say that, because the fact that we've been chopping and changing on subjects so quickly is actually how my mind works. So it should be a pretty good eye-opener to people that don't know me, that this maybe I've created this, who knows?
Well, it really kind of, I'm getting that kind of feeling from you, definitely, just maybe could be partly from our end here as well, too, but that's okay, you know, just with the way things, as I said, are set up this week, because it's been a little bit out of the ordinary to begin with, given our geographical locations and times, the way you being over in the UK there, down in the southwestern tip of the, I guess, island as it's known, Cornwall, of course, being the region, and myself over here on another, well, not quite island, but peninsula, South Korea. But let's just, if we could, hear a few of your URLs that you've got to share with us. We know you've got a bit of a presence, as we've discussed already, over on Minds.com. In fact, we can see you right now trending over on Minds.com, courtesy of the Great Britain Group. Can you believe that?
I can't believe that. That's actually excellent. I'm very happy with that. Yeah, the URLs. Please come and check me out on Minds.com/... Fortean Talks. Go on the VidMe channel, vid.me/KernoLifeMix. That's KERNOWLIFEMIX. Don't know why I picked that rather than Fortean Talks, but I did. And Twitter. Twitter is the next big one behind all the others, which is, I think, @Raven_Risolier, which is very, very hard name to spell, but RISOLIERE. And check out the rakeandherald.tv. I have occasionally got interesting things for you to read on there, and the rest of the website is fantastic as well.
You've got merch and goodies to share with the world as well, do you not?
Oh, God, yeah, I absolutely forgot about that. I think it's threadless.com/KernoLifeMix, just like the VidMe channel. There's tons of different T-shirts. If you're a pro-capitalist, some of it's there for you. If you're pro Christmas, there's stuff on there for that as well. Football themed things, everything. Check it out. Go and pick up some T-shirts and hooded tops and all the rest of it.
Pro pot too, let's not forget.
It's illegal here. I put that out for the American libertarians.
Illegal, you said. That's like, das ist verboten, ja?
Yes.
Do you sense that changing anytime soon, or what's the general mood like on that issue? Just stick to the pubs and just knock back your grog and smoke your fags, and that's about as far as it goes?
Yeah, the pop movement in the UK is mostly propagated by the left rather than the right, because we don't have a huge amount of libertarians in the UK. Personally, I think make it legal. I don't care what anyone does, really. I think I'm a small government guy, so I think everything should be legal. But the unfortunate side of it is, in this country, it is mostly propagated by the left, and it is wanted to be controlled by big government rather than letting you grow your plants if you want to grow your plants or whatever it is you want to do. So I don't really see it changing anytime soon. There just isn't enough small C conservatives or big C conservatives that are interested in changing that. So it's all about pubs. It's all about knocking back your beer, ale, wine, whiskey, and bumming a few fags.
And you've got a lot of great comedians there in the UK. Great country, a lot of great personalities. You, of course, I think after tonight's conversation, quite happily add to that list of outstanding, captivating, or otherwise intriguing individuals. So I think pretty much that's about it, my friend. On that note, I'll add a few more things here just with the post-production end of it all. Operation Secret Santa, we have the third annual time that we've worked on booting that one up and working on kicking that seasonal campaign off. So we're thinking maybe there could be a potential tie-in there. It's mostly focused on helping the homeless or people that are living in an impoverished state or what have you. So, clothing, food, that sort of thing. We can fill you more in the details later, but perhaps there might be ultimately a bit of a tie-in there as far as the merch and of things is concerned with what you have to offer there in your 40 and talks inventory. We'll just have to play that one by ear and send you a couple of the related links and to see what you think of it all. We're looking for podcasters, and we're looking for talent. Let's just leave it at that, okay? So, and the scheduling issue, we'd like to have things kind of run around the clock 24/7 here. It's a 10-day campaign, kicks off on the 15th of December, and it's all for a good cause, helping people directly from one party to the next via our team of elves and Secret Santa sponsors. So, alrighty then, Raven. All the best, and happy sailing, my friend.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Ahoy, matey. Aye now, there we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. This week, we're sending a big and hearty shout-out to our most recent Robin Hood patron, Missouri-based podcast promoter and Lost Arts radio producer, Emily Anderson. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com
or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber. Looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach, basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google Plus, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!